left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It's a Tuesday, November 19th. Steinberg with you on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Save. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts on this Tuesday. And on Tuesdays, we always say hello to our NHL insider. It's time to check in with Frank Saravalli, and he joins us every week, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff and DailyFaceoff.com. Mr. Saravalli, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Mr. Steinberg?
I'm doing well. Here in this market, the Dustin Wolf buzz is building kind of by the week after he turns in more and more good performances. Let me ask you this. It's been the topic in this market for the last few days since he posted his first career shutout on Friday night. Number two overall in 5-on-5 save percentage in the NHL. He's top 10 in overall save percentage right now. We're not even a quarter of the way through the season, but this guy continues to be pretty good. What are Dustin's legitimate shots at being in the Calder Trophy conversation?
Well, first off, he's squarely now in the conversation, which I think is a big step forward, because you think back to the start of the year, everyone's placing their bets on who's got a chance to win Rookie of the Year, and I didn't hear anyone mentioning him.
Yeah.
So that's a big step forward. He's also accomplishing this at the same time that neither one of the sort of so-called favorites has lit the world on fire. Logan Stankoven has had some really good moments in Dallas, but I think he still has 4 goals. Matvei Michkov has been scratched twice. Macklin Celebrini missed essentially a whole month of the season so far. So the door has been wide open, and Lane Hutson has had some really impressive moments, and he was my preseason pick, but also a bunch of miscues to this point. So it's wide open, and I will say there's a few things that I think need to happen in order for him to become the front runner. One, he's going to have to play, rip off more starts as this goes on, which I think you're already starting to see. And so that's one part of the equation. And the other is the quality of competition is going to need to increase. To this point, I think the Flames have done a really good job and smart job of putting him in positions to succeed and get confident and get his feet wet, and that part has been really, I think, again, a smart move. But you can't just play against some of the bottom feeders in the league. You got to step that competition up, and I think that is probably next on the list.
How surprised are you with what he's been able to do so quickly at this level?
Not surprised at all. I mean, we know what his track record is in the AHL. He had absolutely nothing left to prove. If anything, I'm a little bit surprised that it's been a bit of a slow burn to get to this point, meaning the Flames have been really, I don't want to say cautious because I don't think that's the right word. I think deliberate is the correct word. And for good reason. Like, this is the position in the NHL that takes the longest to develop. But at this age now, at 23, it's not really insanely young anymore for a goalie. They've had time, they've used it, and I think moving forward now, it's really easy to make the case that he's been way better off for it.
Yeah, and it kind of, you know, as you mentioned, like he'll start on Tuesday here against the New York Islanders. That'll be his fifth start in seven games. And I don't think at any point we're going to be talking about the Flames getting away from it being a tandem, but I do think you're going to start to see maybe some more runs when it comes to both these goaltenders. You know, if Wolf continues on like this, how, and I know that we've talked about at times, you know, maybe there is a world where Dan Vladar is back with this team next year as well on an extension. Where do you think that goes if Wolf continues to play as well as he has?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because my first trade targets board of the season comes out tomorrow.
Ooh.
And Dan Vladar is going to be on the list.
Okay.
And look, it's not a foregone conclusion that he's moved by any stretch. But speaking of door being open for Dustin Wolf in the Calder race, the door is wide open now with Wolf's play and Cooley's play for the Wranglers for Craig Conroy and his staff to seize on an opportunity where, hey, look, Vladar, reverse or inverse, exactly what we just talked about. Vladar has played the bulk of the starts, shouldering the tough competition. His numbers are the best that they've been in 3 years. He's responded well from surgery. And we're playing in a league where Matt Larkin, my colleague at Daily Faceoff, wrote last week about the death of the 900 save percentage. He's like, this is the prime time to move him. And so I think the Flames, depending on what the goaltending market looks like, and it isn't always a big one because teams look at it kind of like the way I always frame it, the game of musical chairs.
Right.
Every summer there's like 15 to 20 goalies that change teams and are available. Do you want to give up a pick to jump the line? Do you want to give up an asset? And the Flames don't have to do that, but they're well within their right, and they'd be foolish to not consider it.
Yep, agreed on that front. And that's going to be a really interesting one to watch here as we move towards the deadline. Last one on
that. He's got the size. Like,
yeah.
That's the big thing, is that teams love the size. And now that he's gotten that surgery and seems to be moving a lot better, which, again, no guarantee, he's put in the work to potentially earn himself a bigger opportunity. And it's abundantly obvious that Wolf is not just the guy for the future, but he's already kind of really the guy for today.
Speaking of, you know, moving towards the trade deadline, the Flames lost one of their potential targets to move when the news came out about Anthony Mantha and his season-ending surgery. So that won't be an asset they can use. Andre Kuzmenko hasn't scored in 14 consecutive games. He has 2 points in his last 10 games. He has one goal all this season. What does the future look like for Kuzmenko? I know we had talked about potentially talks of extensions here. He's also a guy that could be a trade target as we move towards the deadline. Like, what the heck does this future look like for Kuzmenko and the Flames?
I couldn't even hazard a guess, because, you know, if I shake the magic eight ball that I have over here, like, the answer would be try again.
Yeah.
It's been a really tough go for him. And he really hasn't been the same for a while now in the NHL. And so he kind of forced the Canucks' hand in terms of piece they had to pluck off their roster. He took some convincing to come to Calgary, and I think the Flames were hoping that he'd get back on track and they'd be able to convince him to stay. And I don't know if he has been resistant to that, or if he would just like to see or do something different or have some choice or say in the matter. It's tough to put your finger on exactly what it is, but whatever it is, it isn't working. And there'd probably be some interest in someone to rehab him, but there's also really, like, there's not a lot of value there as well. So I think we need a little bit more time to come to the answer and determination on that.
That's probably fair. Frank Saravalli's with us, our daily faceoff NHL insider. He joins us Tuesdays here on Flames Talk. Let's move on to the rest of the league because it has been a big news day in the NHL on this Tuesday, starting with a coaching change in Boston. Despite a points percentage over 700, Jim Montgomery is out as head coach of the Boston Bruins, replaced by associate coach Joe Sacco. What was your reaction to Boston making this move earlier on Tuesday?
I mean, not really surprised. As soon as the game ended last night, I messaged a player on the Columbus Blue Jackets and I said, did you guys just get Jim Montgomery fired? I mean, that's kind of exactly what that game looked like, felt like. We were already dealing with a coach coming out of the weekend who criticized his team's, quote, lack of juice. And whenever you start to hear that, plus one of the kind of bottom five teams in the league comes into your building and absolutely waxes you on an account of lack of compete and work ethic, I mean, the writing is kind of on the wall. That said, I don't know that that necessarily means that this was the right move. I mean, just look at the numbers. 184 games coached with the Boston Bruins and 41 regulation losses. Mm-hmm. You kind of can't really do much better than that. And it's not all on the coach. Like, the coach isn't the guy lacing up his skates and going out there and competing. And when you don't compete, it's his head that rolls. And there's also a fair, healthy amount of blame to go around to the management group. Look, I thought the Bruins were in much better position this season with the additions of Zadorov and Lindholm. I thought they addressed some holes and needs. But that said, they also still lost Jake DeBrusk and Heinen and James Van Riemsdyk, and go pick, some pieces that have departed this team. There's been some influx in addition to Linus Ullmark and breaking up that tandem that really was the backbone of that team, not to mention the saga that unfolded with Jeremy Swayman, which has resulted in not just some hurt feelings over the process, but also a goaltender who hasn't rebounded and has played in the mid-80s to this point in the season in save percentage. Like, there's a lot to unpack. It's not nearly as simple as just the coach. And right. I don't know that Joe Sacco as the associate is going to come in and all of a sudden snap his finger and all of a sudden the Bruins are going to get better.
Yeah. And he's the interim head coach as it stands right now. And you know, you take a look at some of the numbers, even going back to last year, Frank, specifically when it comes to Boston's goaltending and how much that buoyed them with the duo of Ullmark and, of course, Jeremy Swayman, who's still there. Like, that was a, like, I don't know what percentage you want to put it at, but a massive reason for their success, where they were kind of a middling team at 5-on-5 at times. Now the goaltending hasn't been anywhere near as good. You're like, okay, well, you don't have to look too far as to just, again, how important that position ends up being, and specifically when it comes to a coach's future.
Did you just say buoyed? Did you mean buoyed?
Is that actually how we say it? Buoyed?
I think so. I don't know.
I thought it was always boy.
I never heard. Oh, well, there you go. You learn something new every day. Sorry. I never miss an opportunity to bust your stones.
I like
But that said, like, yeah, their goaltending has exposed an issue that a lot of people have seen for a while with this Bruins team. And I can think of a few other teams and also some inverse examples. Look at the New York Rangers and nights that Igor Shesterkin rarely, that it happens, but nights that he stumbles and how different that team looks.
Yeah.
Look at the Flames this year and the goaltending that they've gotten, and then look at their place in the standings and tell me how different is this team than last year? Is it insanely different? I would say probably, like, on the balance of it, probably not. Do you think it is? I mean, they're definitely, I think they're working harder. They're more connected. But if we're going to explain the difference in the standings and the Flames being in the playoff picture or not, isn't the difference just goaltending?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very, very fair. And, I mean, even, yeah, you take a look at the numbers here and the numbers lot. Yeah, and that is very fair. And also, like, do you say route or route?
I guess it depends on usage in a sentence.
The only time I use route is when I'm talking football. The rest of the time I use route.
Okay. Well, good to know.
And Vickers just showed me. Apparently it is buoyed. I always thought it was buoyed. That's very interesting. So you
buoyed,
you got me.
Yeah,
I
don't know. Yeah, okay.
Buoyed. Right. I like that.
Good work.
And respecting his privacy, of course. What the heck can you tell us about JT Miller and his leave of absence in Vancouver?
I think when you and having a chance to check in with some people in Vancouver, this is a hard reset. It's from a physical perspective. This is a guy that was banged up to start the year. You remember through their swing out east and Philadelphia, he left that game against the Flyers, came back, didn't take faceoffs. I don't think his shoulder has been right for a while. That's according to the people that I've spoken to over the last several weeks. And then a mental one, you know, you see Sunday's game against the Preds, Miller is stapled to the bench for the last 14 minutes or so. This is a guy who has one of the most unbelievable motors in the NHL. His intensity is off the charts. He wants to win and craves the competition more than, like, quite literally 99.8% of this league. It is so impressive how hard that guy goes. And sometimes that gets the best of you. Sometimes that eats you up. And he's had a good start to the year, points-wise and production-wise. Obviously, at some point Sunday, Rick Tocchet saw something he liked. This doesn't have anything to do with that. And he's not accompanying the team on their six-game road trip, but I think everyone's hoping that JT Miller can get back soon.
Okay. What is Thatcher Demko's status right now? It sounds like there's a little bit more buzz on him getting close, very close to returning. Like, how close are we talking right now?
I was told potentially before the end of the month, so pretty close, considering that we're almost at U.S. Thanksgiving. The goal when he rejoined the team in L.A. was to stack 2 full weeks at least of practice, one on top of the other, and then take it from there. So I don't believe there's any chance to re-injure this injury, as far as I know. It's purely a matter of Thatcher Demko feeling comfortable. And when he gives the green light is when he can do it. The Canucks aren't asking. They're just waiting. You tell us. And I was told that before the end of November is a distinct possibility.
Okay. That's good. And I mean, for a guy who's battled it as much as he has, it would just be good to see him back in, knowing how difficult it's been for him the last little bit. Two more for you, Frank. What's going on with Austin Matthews? Why is he in Munich? What is happening with this injury situation? You don't usually go to Munich for something minor, but, like, what do we know about this scenario?
Not a lot, because Austin Matthews is hypersensitive to any bit of injury information and or illness information. Just ask Steve Simmons from a COVID test a few years ago.
That's right.
They don't share much when it comes to him. I was told this is a nagging injury. I would assume muscular. I don't know exactly what they're seeking in terms of treatment. To be honest, haven't pried, because it, even though he's been day-to-day for 3 weeks, it also hasn't been all that interesting. This Munich trip kind of adds a different dimension to it. But I can tell you that speaking to people with the Leafs, they aren't concerned. And in fact, they are thankful that he's gone this distance to make sure that this gets solved, because this is something that stretches back to training camp. He's played through it to this point, and their only hope is that when he comes back, it's completely in their rearview mirror. And that's their only thought process, is like, hey, we don't care about a Rocket Richard race. However many games you need to miss is however many that takes. And we want you back at 100% and then to stay in the lineup once you are back.
Last one. There's been some buzz here recently about potentially a large jump in next year's salary cap, maybe more than the $4.5 million that we were initially expecting. What are you hearing in terms of what next year's salary cap number could look like?
Well, the Flames don't need an increase, given as they have quite a bit in cap savings to this point that they are banking and accruing. So it won't be really of much help to Craig Conroy and his team. However, what we're due to see in a relatively short period of time is a market correction based on the amount of revenue that the NHL is currently generating. So what does that mean? Frank, please explain this to me like I'm five. The answer is, when COVID hit, they created a different lag formula, it's called, in the MOU, and slowed down how revenue impacts the salary cap formula. If you had gone back to the original formula and put that in place now, the salary cap would be 100 plus, approaching $110 million a year. As a result, player salaries have been relatively low in relation to overall revenue relative to the cap, because they designed it that way to lessen the burden coming out of the pandemic, because they didn't think revenues would rebound this quickly and wanted to ensure a better environment for owners. So it's changed dramatically. And the formula, the system, hasn't caught up. And so we're all expecting, and I can tell you, Ryan Pike, who does a great job, he was asking me about the lag formula last week, believe it or not.
Shocking. Shocking.
Yeah, I know. It's like peak Ryan Pike.
Peak Pike.
So he was asking about it, and it's actually an important distinction. If this next CBA gets ironed out in a timely fashion and the revenue is not just relinked, but the lag formula goes back to what it was, we could see a massive, massive jump. And I think everyone that's on either side of this wants to avoid handing NHL GMs a pile of potentially $15, $20 million in one shot of a salary cap increase, save them from themselves, and have this essentially come in with step increases.
Okay.
That this would kind of represent that, if that makes any sense.
It does. And I do appreciate you explaining it to me like I'm five. I've learned pronunciation and a little bit more about the salary cap with our conversation. I know you got a roll. Great stuff as always, Frankie. Thank you, pal. We'll talk next week. Hey, have a great week.
See you, buddy.
That's Frank Saravalli. He is our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us on Tuesday, and he joins us brought to you by our friends South Trail Chrysler as we start to wrap things up, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It's Flames Talk on this Tuesday, November 19th. Aaron Vickers and Pat Steinberg along with you here at the Scotiabank Saddledome and the Hot Stove Lounge. And following Friday's win over the Nashville Predators, Ryan Huska hit the 100 games coached mark in the NHL, at least as an official head coach. I mean, I guess if you count those interim games, he's over 100 already.
Semantics.
But as a full-time NHL coach, as the head coach of the Flames announced and not filling in for Daryl Sutter in the little interim basis while he was clearing COVID protocol in 2021. Yes, this is now 100 games under the belt of Ryan Huska as head coach of the Calgary Flames. 82 last year, 18 so far this year. I checked the math. That equals 100. Nice round number, and always looked at as opportunities to reflect on what you've seen so far. By the way, that's 4.7% of Scotty Bowman's 2,141 games coached in the NHL, which remains the NHL record. So he's
on his way.
He's only got 95.3% of Scotty Bowman's record left to get to for Ryan Huska. How do we reflect on his first 100 games? The record is 47-45-8 for a .510 points percentage since taking over as head coach of the Flames to start last season. How do we reflect? What are our biggest takeaways on this? Because my biggest takeaway is, without question, has been since very early last season, just how hard the group works and how hard this team plays for him, how hard this team plays for him on a nightly basis, how rarely the Flames are the second hardest working team on the ice. It's happened maybe one handful of times since he's taken over, like a couple of times this year, maybe two handfuls if you count a few times last year. Like, more often than not, under this head coach, the Flames have been the hardest working team or the one of the two hardest working teams on the ice. Like, very rarely are they outworked is the point that I'm trying to make, which has been my biggest takeaway throughout his tenure as a member of the Flames or as head coach of the Flames, rather.
Yeah, the thing that sticks out to me the most is the amount of buy-in that he's been able to get from the players, regardless of circumstance, regardless of whether or not it was last year and you had five pending unrestricted free agents that were looking like they were going to be walking out the door at some point, and it's the messaging that he's able to deliver. I would sort of lean towards him being a bit of a player's coach, but at the same time, he still is able to hold players accountable. We've seen him shorten his bench in the second period. We've seen him do it in the third period. Doesn't necessarily matter what your salary is, where you're supposed to be slotting in the depth chart, so on and so forth. He's not shy to send a message with how he dictates ice time. So the things that kind of have caught me through the first 100 games is the amount of buy-in that he's been able to get from his veterans and that veteran leadership core, and that trickles down to the rest of the group. His messaging day in, day out to them, and the fact that he's not shy if he sees something not working in a game, whether that's individually or from a team perspective. He doesn't wait till the next practice to try and adjust it or fix it. He'll do that in game.
Text line's open, by the way, at 960-960. If you want to chime in on this one, kind of your biggest takeaways through 100 games now as head coach of the Flames for Ryan Huska. And I think that we're basically singing from the same hymn book in that, yeah, I think that because hard work and a hard brand of hockey is how this group, especially this season, but even going back to last year, is how this team is going to have success. You need to have that buy-in. So I think that's absolutely just as good a descriptor for it, is that they there's a lot of buy-in to the way they need to play, and that buy-in has started with this leadership group, and that has trickled down to the rest of the team. And I think that's a real testament, because, you know, I don't think that's always easy to do, Vix. He's a first-time NHL head coach. He played one game in the NHL, and he always likes to joke about that. But sometimes NHL players, they look at it and say, well, you know, you've never coached in the NHL, and or you're a first-time coach and you never played in the NHL. Sometimes that's hard to get buy-in from, and I think it's a testament to, look, Ryan Huska was not a bad player when he played. He played on some pretty good junior teams. He played with some guy named Jerome on a pretty good Blazers team. He had a pretty good minor hockey career. Like, he was a very good player, but, you know, not everybody makes it to the NHL. And then he worked his way through the coaching ranks. He was an elite Western League coach. He was a high-end American League coach. And now he's in the NHL for the first time. And so I think that his path, his demeanor, the way that he is able to message and communicate with his players, I think that's a real testament to the fact that he has gotten a lot of buy-in despite some of those quote-unquote handicaps that sometimes first-time coaches run into.
Well, and I think he managed to use the fact that he's been in the organization for some time to his benefit. Now, that can go one of two ways. It can go the way it's gone for Ryan Huska, who graduates into the head coaching position where you don't necessarily see a lot of guys go from assistant to head coach, where you can play the good cop at one moment and then the players kind of look at you and go, you're trying to play bad cop now? We just saw 3 years of good cop. Like, we're not buying it. It's not going to work. It can work for you or against you having those past relationships. And I think with what we've seen from that buy-in, the work ethic that you talked about, Ryan Huska has been very effective in his messaging. I think that's allowed him to make that transition a lot more smoothly than we've seen perhaps coaches in the past, whether it's with the Calgary Flames or with other organizations, where you graduate to the big job,
yeah,
and then suddenly the players have already seen all your tricks as the good cop, as the buddy assistant coach or associate coach. You get to the big chair, it's like, well, now we don't know. You're trying to change who you are, or you're trying to change your messaging or your demeanor. No, I firmly believe that Ryan Huska's messaging has allowed him to, and we'll talk about various degrees of success, because you mentioned it's still a 47-45-8 team, but this is a team that's building to something further down the road than perhaps more immediate results.
Yep.
But I would reflect on those first 100 games as being successful from an individual standpoint
and from
a team standpoint.
I think that it's been a successful start to his career as head coach of the Flames, specifically knowing the circumstances, specifically knowing what this group is doing. They're going in a different direction. Craig Conroy's mentioned and called this a 3 to 5 year plan. And when he hired Ryan Huska, he said he's hiring a coach to grow with. Like, he wants his team that he is pulling the strings for to grow with their head coach as well. And so, you know, this was never supposed to be just a short-term hire.
Right.
The idea was for Huska to still be the coach when they are getting closer to or at the end goal of being a more competitive or more contending-like team. So, you're right. It's not always easy going from being the assistant to being the head coach. That has its handicaps that goes along with it too. So that's another important note. I really like his attention to detail. You talk to players about how detailed the pre-scouts are, how detailed the video sessions are, what they need to know coming into games. I think that has been a real positive, and that's one thing that you hear very consistently from his players as well, is just how well prepared they feel going into every game.
And that's nothing new for Ryan Huska. He's been doing it at all levels for a number of years now. And correct me if I'm mistaken on this one, but didn't he hit Craig Conroy with a massive PowerPoint presentation when he was applying for the head coaching position, where Connie was just like, look at how prepared this guy is. Like, how could he not be the choice? This is just sort of the business, the way that Ryan Huska goes about business is you don't want to be ever underprepared based on what the guy on the other bench is doing. You're not going to get outworked. You're not going to get outprepared. It's up to the players to absorb and recognize those details and implement and execute those details. But yeah, Ryan Huska, in terms of his preparation, if you will, and his ability to prepare his players is quite good as well.
I've liked the way that he also, like, I like the way he calms waters. And I think, honestly, he was thrown into a bit of a hornet's nest. He was not thrown into the easiest situation to succeed right from the get-go.
No.
With all of what was facing this Flames team, like with the players who potentially wanted out and the uncertainty about where player X and player Y were going to go.
Well, the relationship between the players and the former head coach as well, where it was a tricky situation.
I'm just talking about, like, you come in with all of that and all that uncertainty swirling around, and does Lindholm want to be here, or does Zadorov want to be here, and does Tanev want to stay? Is Hanifin going to sign? Like, there was a lot swirling around this team last year, and I give him a lot of credit. Like, that's a hornet's nest that most first-time head coaches don't have to navigate, and I think he did a really nice job of you know, kind of galvanizing the group and telling them, hey, you know, we're in here. And I know that it's easy to let, the noise from this spot or that spot seep in, or the rumors from that insider or that insider to start messing with your head. But we're in here, and all that matters is what's inside this room. And I think that really did a nice job of helping to kind of set a culture in the organization. It's why I think it's a big reason why you hear guys like Mackenzie Weegar and Nazem Kadri and Blake Coleman and Michael Backlund talk about, look, if you don't want to be here, we don't want you here either. It's not like you're a jerk, we don't like you as a person, but it's like, no, we're building a team here. We want guys who want to be a part of this. If you want to be here, then you're welcome to be here. If you don't want to be here, well, then let's look for a solution, because we only want guys who want to be here. And I think a big part of that comes from the head coach as well.
Well, yeah, you had all those rumors swirling about the futures of the pending unrestricted free agents, but there was also almost every 3 weeks or every month, there was a subtraction coming off your roster, and most of the return was future assets. They weren't assets that weren't going to help you immediately. So you get through one trade, then another trade, then a third trade, with not a whole lot necessarily coming back to help reinforce your current roster or help reaffirm your messaging to the players that do want to be members of the Calgary Flames. It takes a good chunk of work and trust, and two-way trust, from both the players and the leadership group to the head coach and vice versa, that you can see that it's not necessarily the players versus the coach's room, or, you know, trying to do one thing and then telling the players. It feels like everybody's pulling the same rope in the same direction, and that's a testament to, one, your leaders, but also to your head coach, who's laying out the plan.
Now, this text comes in at 960-960. Come on, guys. It's a little early to be pumping the tires as much as you're pumping them right now. That comes from Daryl at 960-960. I mean, the reality is they are just two games above 500 combined since he took over as head coach, and he'd be the first to say that's not where they wanted to be, and whether you think that they should be here or should be there. Fact is, the coach is here to win, and a coach gets behind a bench to try to put the best lineup on the ice and come up with the best game plan each and every night to win hockey games. So he's not going to be happy with that 5-10 points percentage. And it hasn't been perfect. It probably, he's admitted it. It took too long, and maybe the drastic change in the way they played to start last year wasn't maybe the way to go, because, or at the very least, he underestimated how long the adjustment would take to get that stuff down pat. The power play has been horrendous it wasn't great under Daryl either for most of the time, and power play in this city has been generally not a strong suit, but the power play has been horrendous the last two seasons, save a 20-25 game stretch. The penalty kill has been generally good. This is the first year the PK has struggled a little bit. Scoring has been an issue for a lot of games, and not all of this is coaching. A lot of it is roster construction, but to paint the other side, and Ryan would be the first one to tell you that has not been perfect either. So I think based on what the Flames are trying to accomplish here and based on where they're going, I think you can deem it a successful first 100 games for them, with room to grow and definitely some areas that haven't been perfect. I think that's I don't think that is an overly rosy way of putting it, considering all of what has gone into those first 100 games.
I think we've seen very much a lot of good. That was a very terrible way to say that, but relative to expectation for this team. If the expectation for the Calgary Flames was to make the playoffs and advance to the Western Conference Final and see what happens there, then no, you're well short of your goal. But what you're trying to do as an organization is build, and you mentioned it, build with the coach, build with the players, the young players, and develop a new core so that 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you're ready to open up that window of contention. You're ready to be a perennial playoff team. You're ready to be a team that can push for a Western Conference Final and then see what happens after that. Those are two different sets of expectation. And yeah, if the expectation was this team needs to be a year in, year out Stanley Cup contender, well, no, they're not there yet. And that's not going to necessarily be a, you know, feather in the cap to where this organization is currently. But when you look and you're trying to bring along young players and you're trying to develop and you're trying to set a new culture for the organization, then yeah, I do think that you can claim that the first 100 games with Ryan Huska behind the bench have been a successful one.
And there is definitely some room to grow, and I think he'd be the first one to tell you that. This coming from Trent on the text line. I met Huska before the Flames hired him. He's grown, and I like his style of coaching for the most part. I don't agree with all his decisions, but you'll never fully agree with a head coach. That comes from Trent. And I will say, I haven't either. That's part of the beauty of being on the outside and you know, doing this medium, is that sometimes you're going to question decisions and say, I wonder about that. Like, sometimes I've wondered about the usage of young players. But what I always have appreciated with Ryan is that, you know, you ask him the question and he gives you an answer. And he understands that not everybody is going to agree, but also doesn't care that you don't agree, because that's not – you can't. You cannot care what idiot on the radio says, or what fans think, or what writers are right. Like, you can't worry about that. You have to trust where you've been, your instincts, the people around you, all that type of stuff. But I always appreciate that when he has been questioned on things, or people have wondered and asked him a direct question about, why did you think about doing this, or what went into you making this decision, he always gives you an answer. And at the very least, like, you know that he's that the whether you agree with the decision or not, the one thing you can be very, very sure about with this coach is that he doesn't just, like, come in and make a decision on a whim. He's like, you know what?
I'm going to try Miramanov as a right winger today.
You know what? We're starting this goalie because I feel like it, and we're going to roll these. I did some dice and rolled these lines, and we're going to do that. Like, no, a lot goes into these decisions, every single one that is made, and that goes back to the preparation part that we talked about a little earlier.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention, is there's whether or not you agree with his line combinations, his D pairings, who's going to be the starting goalie on any given night, how much that goalie is used or not used, Ryan Huska could pretty much sit at this table that we're at now and explain every single one to where you still might not agree with it at the end of the day, but you understand the thought process that he's presenting in making his decisions. It's not drawing names out of a hat and going, oh, that'll work, or maybe that won't work, but we're going to try it anyways. There's preparation for the coach just as much as there's preparation for a player that goes into his decision making.
It is Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. This hour, the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at calgarylockandsafe.com.